Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Sunday, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good. How are you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. Now, I told you, but we were talking a little bit before the show actually started. There are two short stories I wanted to share with the audience before we get to our guest, who I see is in queue. The first one is not paranormal at all. It's just strange. And I put this out on Facebook, but it was just so odd that I'll just tell you about it. You might have. Did you read my Facebook? But I think you did, right?
Yes, I did. Of course.
About the.
We got to follow each other.
Park.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. So, and then the second thing I want to briefly talk about is something that's potentially paranormal that happened to me today, or not really happened to me, but something that's weird happened today that could be paranormal. So the first thing was, it was late at night. Me and somebody else, we went to this park. It's along the river. We're hanging out. We're having a good time, blah, blah, blah. You know, and of course, the cops are all out looking for shady people in the parks. So we were down on the dock there, enjoying the water, looking at the stars, just having a good time. We went up to the bench, which is up by the parking lot, and my car was parked quite a ways away. And this cop pulls up, and he's parked behind our cars. And he's using a spotlight, and he's, you know, keeps spotlighting our cars. And he's sitting there for several minutes, and like magic, just the oddest thing happened. So he's spotlighting our cars, and out of nowhere, I swear, literally nowhere, I look to my right. There is a guy in a ghillie suit 5 feet away from me, staring at both of us sitting on the bench. Now, if you don't know what a ghillie suit is, it's like what snipers use to make so you can't see them. It's camouflage, but it's like really, you'd have to Google it. It's just really intense camouflage that snipers and stuff like that when you want to hide. So I'm looking at this guy. I'm not startled at all, because anybody that knows me, I'm big and yeah, I don't scare. And so I'm staring at this guy. I can't see his face because it's got this ghillie covered thing. And I look at him and I go, nice ghillie suit. And he goes, you know, I've been crawling on the ground for 20 minutes. And can you guys just look scared because there's some people in the truck over there watching? It was the weirdest thing ever. Can you? I mean, that's a good way to get shot, sneaking up on people in camo. You know what I mean?
Wow. What time, if you don't mind me asking, Jason, what time was that happened?
It was a little bit after 11 o'clock at night. Everybody was gone. But another weird thing, the cop was still there, you know, 200 yards away, and he's creeping along on the ground in a ghillie suit. And it's kind of frightening to think that somebody can sneak up on you and you have no idea. I didn't hear anything. I heard a truck idling behind me, and I kept looking back. And I didn't see any vehicles, but even looking back, I never saw the guy. He wasn't there, and then he was there. You know, it's kind of
weird. That's strange. So was the person that was with you, was that person freaked out, or was that kind of put a question in her mind or his mind?
No, not at all. She was looking at the cop, and I was kind of looking at the cop, and it was just an odd thing. I mean, most people would be scared to have something like that, but it's just like, if somebody's going to rob me, I will destroy you kind of thing. Like, I just don't get scared. I mean,
yeah,
I'm 6'2",
good for you. And you
240
didn't see it
pounds.
Alone. That's weird. Wow. Okay, so what happened
totally.
The second time?
Okay, the second thing. Today, we went out to outside of a town called Dufour, which is really out there, rural area, rolling hills, tall grass. And there's a community cemetery out there, which is just beautiful. It's not spooky at all. And I just bought a nice camera, and I went out there and was taking pictures with someone else. And anyway, so it was unremarkable. Got some great shots of some of the headstones and the scenery and all that. And she was showing me one of the pictures she took, and the shot consisted of kind of one of those shots where you're looking up at a tree and the sunbeam's coming down, you know, the sun's behind the tree and you're getting the starburst through the trees. You know what I'm
exactly.
talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So she's showing me this, and she's pointing out close to where the sun is coming through and zoomed it in. I kid you not. It is my face. And that's weird because when she took that picture, first of all, she's pointing it up in a tree towards the sun. Second of all, I'm 100 yards away on the other side of the cemetery, and it's this ghostly image of my face. What does that mean? It's clearly my face. I mean, I recognize it.
It's a doppelganger. I'm just teasing you.
Maybe pareidolia.
What you should do is after the show, why don't you screenshot it to me and go and why don't you send it to me and I'll give you a quick holler and see what's going on. Yeah, sometimes you're sure it's not a lens or anything or a lens flare or anything like that. Huh? It's pretty obvious.
I mean,
it face
could be. There's the lens flare from the sun, but I can clearly make out my face. And you know me, I'm a total skeptic when it comes to that with the pareidolia and everything else. But it was so obviously my face. You know, maybe it was some
crazy
sort of technical.
Oh my gosh!
I don't know.
Okay, so what I'd like you to do, we'll talk after the show. I'll send me a screenshot and I'll pick up on it and tell you what's going on. Okay.
Maybe it's in my brain too. Maybe if somebody else look at it and not see me, I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was weird.
And it's not pareidolia, right?
I mean, it very well, maybe it probably is, and maybe out of a sheer weird coincidence, my face is pareidolia-ized in pixels. I don't know. But it was strange enough for me to scratch my head and zoom in, and it was in my brain. Of course, we all have different perceptions. We perceive things differently. In my brain, it looked like me.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. Okay, well, I'll check it out for sure. Definitely.
All right.
All right. Excellent. Wow. Yeah, I'm excited to see what that looks like. So, okay. So we're going to have a returning guest. His name is Manny Pureheart. He's a psychic medium, and also I'm not sure. He might have to correct me as like a philosopher in higher consciousness. We're going to talk about, you know, we're going to kind of jump ship and just kind of go with the flow, but we're going to talk about raising our vibration. What can we do to raise our vibration? And to help our audiences. So, you know, any good tidbits or anything that would be helpful, that would be welcoming because I know we're going to have a lot of people listening tonight. So, yeah, we're going to welcome Wet Manny and see about learning about how to become more consciously aware and raising our vibratory level. Okay?
If anybody needs to raise their vibration, it's me. All right, we'll get Manny on right now.
Yeah.
Hey, Manny.
Here I am.
Hi, Manny. How are you?
I'm doing good. That time you called me Manny, you called me Manny. It's actually pronounced Monty.
Thank you for the correction.
About that.
Okay. No problem. Thank you. Monty, like Mon.
Monty.
Okay.
Yeah, like Om Mani Padme Om.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So talking about the face in the photo, I want to share with you that my wife and I managed to get to Chaco Canyon a year ago. And from the moment we got there, it was very, very obvious that a lot of the ancient ones were accompanying us. And we were standing at the rim of the Great Kiva there at Chaco Canyon. And my wife took a picture of me standing there, and there are several light beings in the picture.
I've actually been there. That's an amazing place. I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we got to go to Chaco Canyon one day and Canyon de Chelly the next. So we immersed ourselves in the ancient ones.
And if there's ancient ones, that's where they'll be. It's an amazing location. It truly is. If anybody ever has an opportunity to explore New Mexico, they should check that out.
Yeah. You know, I, again, since we're kind of just scooting off into the nether regions here, when we stayed at Canyon de Chelly, that night, one of the ancient ones came to me in my dream time, and he taught me. First of all, he took me on a tour of the living Pueblo, and then he took me to a high spot on the cliff face there, where he had an observatory, and he taught me the old language that nobody knows, nobody's heard, nobody speaks, but he taught me a phrase, and it's Nictadestu Ashtanasti, which means I am the keeper of the secrets of the sky.
And so are you talking about the ancient ones? Are you talking about like the Aztecs or Natives, or
I'm talking about the ancient ones who lived in Canyon de Chelly.
Okay.
Is that the one?
They didn't dip the energy. Go ahead.
Is that the one with all the buildings that are built into the, like, under the cliff there? Because I think I went there too. You climb ladders up to it?
Well, there's a lot of those around. You may be thinking of Montezuma's Castle, which is also in that general area.
It's been a long time.
Canyon de Chelly's in the Navajo lands.
That phrase almost sounded Latin to me.
Well, it almost sounds like a lot of things, but every time I say it, every time I speak it, I can feel beings closing in on me in a good way, in a nice way, and I get goosebumps every time. I've got a native couple that are friends of mine and from the Warm Springs tribe, and I said that to them, and they both got goosebumps too, which is just an indication of truth is being spoken or this is correct. So it was kind of cool.
Can you say it one more time?
Nictadestu Ashtanasti. And I've worked with it enough. I think Nick means I am. And Tedestu is, I'm not real sure what it is, but Ashtanasti is, I think, the secrets of the sky. And so Tedestu must be keeper or holder. I am the keeper of the secrets of the sky or the secrets of the stars. He was the tribe's astronomer.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I never have cool dreams like that. I wish I did.
Yeah.
I know it's boring.
Well, sounds like a personal problem. No. You know, it's funny. I go through phases where I remember dreaming, but I don't remember my dreams. And then I have other phases where I have very, very detailed memories of the dreams that I have. And I usually am in a campus situation, or I'm teaching or sharing with others or helping others during my dreams.
I'd actually like to learn more about dream work and stuff like that. I've never paid too much attention to it, but I know there has to be some sort of meaning in there, whether it be subconscious or spiritual or whatever. Dreams are truly fascinating.
Yeah, I've got some half-baked theories about dreaming, and it has to do with other dimensions and other realities and so forth, because some of them are so detailed and so intricate. In fact, this morning I was telling my wife, we recently went to Germany for a couple of weeks to celebrate 30 years together, and we've got some friends over there that took us around and showed us around, and we learned just a smattering of German. And in my dream, I was in a bus station in Germany, and I couldn't find my wife, and I was holding a ticket in my hand, but I didn't know what bus I was supposed to get on. And so I'm trying to tell people in German that I have the ticket, and I don't know the word for ticket. So I was saying Haben Sie, and pointing at the ticket. And then I realized in my dream that I was speaking the wrong words in German. It should be Ich habe. So I not only was I dreaming in another language, but I was correcting my language in the other language in the dream. That was pretty weird.
That is weird. So now we're going to talk about a little bit the subject of raising one's awareness. Is that right? Or becoming more spiritual?
Okay. It's the simplest thing in the world, and it's not very easy. There's a big difference between simple and easy. It is has been for me a matter of dedicated, continual focus. And I try very hard in every moment to step outside myself and observe myself and see how I can improve the being that I am without criticizing the being that I have been. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, I understand it.
Yeah, basically you're just, it's a matter of constant internal evolution, and it's self-driven. It's, you know, if you had met the person that I was the first 45 years of my life, you would not be comfortable being in the same room with him. I certainly wouldn't. And I, as we talked about before, I had the extreme good fortune of having died and gone through the tunnel of light a few times, and it shifted things substantially.
I would imagine those type of experiences are really mind-opening. I mean, I couldn't imagine that. I would imagine that would change somebody's perspective on everything. Having, you know, near-death experiences.
You've got it in a nutshell there. You know, the one thing I like to tell people is when you die, you go through the tunnel of light and you come back, you lose your fear of death. And when you lose your fear of death, you're not afraid to live.
Right. Can you, in case nobody's heard any of those stories, can you pick one and kind of walk us through it again? Because I find it fascinating, and I'm sure there are listeners out there that would love to hear that. Whichever one was the most impactful.
Well, my first death was the most profound experience for me. At the time that I died, I was an agnostic. I knew there was a God out there somewhere, or a divine being, or a supreme being out there somewhere, but it had never really come down and knocked on my door and introduced itself. So I was pretty anti-religion. I still am. But I was in a car wreck, and even though I was wearing a seatbelt at the time, this was when shoulder harnesses had just come out. I was 23 years old, and somebody turned left in front of me and hit my car at a high rate of speed, and I was going a fairly good rate of speed myself. I broke the ring off the steering wheel with my chin, put my head through the windshield, and the horn button hit me in the middle of the sternum and broke the sternum in half, and according to the doctors, bounced the top half off my backbone. And there's things in between that aren't supposed to get squished, like heart and lungs. So I was about a mile from the local VA hospital. I'm a veteran, so the ambulance, when it got there, took me to the VA hospital, and I was kind of slipping in and out of consciousness. I couldn't breathe because my chest was caved in. I had what's called flail chest, where all of my ribs were broken free from my sternum, which is not a good thing. And the was laying on the gurney, and my body was laying on the gurney. I was kind of floating around at the top of the room watching the doctors working on me and talking about, you know, calling my wife and telling her I'd just been in a minor accident because they didn't want her to be in an accident coming to see me and all that stuff. And then they called I'm sorry, I'm getting too many stories going in my head at once. Anyway, I left the room, left my body, and went into the tunnel of light. And the tunnel of light, I can only say it is incredibly bright. It would blind human eyes. And at the far end of the tunnel of light was a portal. And the portal was as much brighter from the tunnel as the tunnel was from Earth. And there was only one place I wanted to be, and that was on the other side of that portal. And immediately the tunnel disappeared, and I was stepping into what I could only describe as a garden beyond description. I get chills every time I do this. The flowers, the air, myself, the butterflies, the birds, everything. The colors were intense and brilliant and things we don't see here on Earth. Everything was made of pure love. And that pure love manifested as pure light. And in that instant, I recognized that in the moment that I knew that I had a question, I knew that I'd always known the answer. I recognized that when everything is made of light, there are no shadows. And when there are no shadows, all things are truly one. And the corollary to that is shadows or darkness in all of its forms only serves to give us the illusion of being separate. It's one of the tools that we use in the third dimension here that gives us the illusion of being separate when in reality, we are all one. And I'm in the garden for what seemed like about 10 minutes and just overcome with wonder. And as I say, when I died, I was an agnostic. And I looked up and here came a tall, robed male figure through the garden toward me. And I knew in an instant that this was the energy or the being that on Earth we refer to as the Christ. He has many names, but he came to me and embraced me. And when it was time for me to step back, I stepped back and he was holding my shoulders and he looked into me, into my eyes with a tear running down his cheek. He says, "Welcome home, brother. You have a choice. You can stay here or you can go back and help the children." For me, there was no choice to make. This is what I do. This is who I am.
Wow. That sounds really, really powerful. What do you think of that, Sherry?
Yeah, it was. It sounded like it, too.
Well, that was 50 years ago, and it still gives me tears and chills.
Man, I couldn't imagine having to go through that kind of trauma and seeing that. It almost seems like having those experiences are a good experience because we live in a world of technology and distraction and ego and all this and being able to experience something that opens your consciousness and it's amazing, you know. Everybody should go through that. I don't know.
But, yeah, I tell my students often that everybody ought to die at least once.
Well, I mean, the world is honestly.
You don't question there is Jesus Christ. You know there is because of that experience.
I know that there is an energy or an entity that mankind has labeled as Christ. I am not a Christian, and I don't think this being would be a Christian either, especially on today's market. You know, because everything is so distorted. But he told me once, we've stayed in touch, and he told me once, he says, "You know, there is one ultimate commandment." In fact, that was during my first visit when I was there, and even though I was dead at the time, I'm thinking, "Now, wait a minute, we're walking on some heavy ground here." He says, "Hear me out. There's one ultimate commandment. And that is to be love in every word, in every thought, in every deed, in every prayer." And I'm not real good at it, but I sure try hard.
And it's something that for all of us can be conscious of it. You know, every thought
exactly.
And every action and, yes, every feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything you do. Try to do your best to be love in that circumstance, in that moment. And if you don't live up to your own expectations, that's actually a good thing because that means that you recognize that there's room for improvement and that leads to improvement. If you beat yourself up because you haven't lived up to your expectations, that's probably not such a good thing. You just do the best you can in each moment.
When we have people or circumstances that triggers, whether it's a feeling or whatever, it's a something negative, you know, it can sometimes challenge us as human beings with our emotions.
Exactly.
And
this is kindergarten. We're here to learn, and that's how we learn, by being offered challenges. everything that happens in our life, everything that happens in our experience, you've heard this 1,000 times, we have two choices. We can be a victim or we can be a student. And those are two sides of the same coin. And the only difference is the victim says, oh, why is this happening to me? And the student says, oh, why is this happening to me? That's the only difference.
I'd imagine once you get in, you know, in line with that, those behaviors where you're being more positive and more loving, that probably your circumstances would improve. You'd start manifesting more things, you know, of a positive nature because you've changed your consciousness or your thought patterns.
Yeah, I think that that is a way to interpret it. The other way to interpret it is the same things happen, but you choose to be a student and not a victim.
It's a choice.
Exactly. Exactly what it is. It's a choice.
And in today's
like
world,
Wayne Dyer says, if you change the way you look at things, the things that you look at can change or will change. And that's all about vibration, thoughts. Feeling.
Perception creates reality. Whatever you perceive and how you interpret it, run it through your filters. That is your reality until you change your filters, change your lenses, change whatever you need to change. But there's a story that Spirit gave me to tell as an example of good and bad events. Say, for instance, in very unlikely circumstances, that Sherry, you and I were sitting across a small table from one another, and there's a deck of cards and a gold bar and a pistol. And we've made an agreement that we'll cut the cards, and whoever gets the highest card gets the gold bar, and the other person has to shoot themselves. Like I said, very unlikely circumstances. So you draw first, and you draw a three. Ooh, doesn't look good for you. And I draw next, and I get a two. So according to our agreement, you get the gold bar, and I'm supposed to shoot myself. Now, it's the same event happening to the same people. For you, if you were an average person, it would be a good thing. For me, if I was an average person, it would be a bad thing. And yet, it's exactly the same event, seen from two different perspectives. So perception creates reality.
And it's funny how people like different things. Like, you know, some people love to skydive, and other people would hate it because they're afraid of heights. I mean, I guess it's all how you perceive it, you know.
Ooh.
One person's pleasure is another person's pain.
Yep, yep. That's true. As a younger person, I was always terribly, terribly afraid of heights. And in 1988, which was the year after my awakening, I got a chance to go to Peru for 10 days. And when I got to Machu Picchu, I've been given several visions and so forth before we got there, and I kind of knew what to expect. But walking along the Inca Trail, there's areas there where there's a sheer drop off of nearly a mile, and on one side, and 720 feet into the rocks on the other side. And I was able to walk that with no problem at all because I had been there. I had been at Machu Picchu, you know, centuries ago. I had memories of flying with the other shaman over the Urubamba River Basin there, over mile straight down. And I completely lost my fear of heights while I was there, just because, you know, it rekindled my familiarity with that.
Well, that's something I need to overcome. I have a terrible, terrible fear of heights.
Yeah.
I have even a problem even climbing ladders, let alone walking over logs.
Yeah. Well, the good news is it isn't the fall that kills you. It's that last half inch.
Yeah.
Well, I'm with you, Sherry, on that one.
Be afraid of.
I'm not a fan of heights myself. I mean, I'm not terrified of it, but it's not. I'm not going to be the guy that's crawling up the 1,500 foot tower to change the light bulbs. Not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't seek them out, but I no longer fear them.
So for people out there, you know, that haven't had these near death experiences, what are some of the things that we could do to kind of change our thought processes and our behaviors to exhibit more love? I know it's probably complicated.
Well, it's complicated because it's so simple. you know, all it takes is focused, loving intent. And the hard part is the focus for most people. They can do it for 2 seconds or 5 seconds, but can you do it every day? You know, how bad do you want it?
Right.
That's what it boils down to. How bad do you want it? And it's never a matter of trying harder or trying more. It's a matter of allowing more. You know, last time I was on the show, I talked to you. I said, everything that I have to teach, I can teach with 4 words. Be love, limit less. And when Spirit was chatting with me a while back, they said, spiritual growth is never, ever a matter of growing more. It is always and only a matter of limiting less. Each day you limit yourself less, there will come the day where you realize that you have always been limitless.
I imagine that we kind of put ourselves in a box and we let society and our environment keep us kind of trapped from stepping out and being more that way.
Yeah, exactly. We are trained from a very, very early age that we are very limited human beings, and nothing could be further from the truth. And part of my growth, I guess you could call it, part of my growth in awareness is that each one of us is an aspect of the Creator. And all of us together are not the tiniest speck of the Creator, because Creator is supposed to be infinite, right? But if you own your spark of divinity, if you really own it, then you can perform divine acts. You know, I do healing work around the world. Broken bones heal instantly. Cancer goes away. Not all the time, but a substantial amount of the time. Somebody came to me with surgically severed nerves, and I worked with them for a minute or so, and the nerves were functional again. So a lot depends on what that person's soul has determined is correct for them to experience, because I can't force anything on anybody. My only tool is love, and love never goes where it's not invited. So if somebody comes to me and they're antagonistic towards the healing work I do, first of all, I'll feel it, I'll know it, and I won't even try. But if somebody comes to me who is extremely skeptical, that's a whole different story. And if they will allow me to work with them, in many times, almost every time, there'll be a very profound healing that occurs, simply because they're not blocking it. They're limiting less. One of my favorite stories is I take Taekwondo. I'm 73 years old. I started taking Taekwondo when I was 68, and I expect to have my black belt before I'm 75. There's a gentleman who I met at the Taekwondo school who's an old military guy, very, very military. And the first time I ever met him, I'd never seen him before. It became obvious that his lower back was hurting him quite badly. And I just, without even thinking about it, reached out, put my hand on his lower back, and he stood up like he'd been shot. And he turned around and said, "What are you doing to me?" And I just said, "I'm loving you." That was the only answer I had for it. And this man had had extreme back problems. He'd been a paratrooper, and he'd smashed up his back pretty good. Had neuropathy, couldn't feel his feet, couldn't feel his hands. And just reaching out in a compassionate manner and touching him for 10 seconds, he started doing jumping jacks and touching his toes, and he kind of almost went into shock, and he stumbled back against the wall that had been just freshly painted, starts rubbing his fingers up and down the wall. He says, I can feel the bumps in the paint. You know, and this was totally unconscious on my part. It was just an act of compassion to reach out and touch this man that was hurting. But because my tool is love, and love does indeed conquer all, and he wasn't actively against it at that moment, and he's probably been praying for healing. As it turns out, he's a very, very fundamentalist Christian, and he was completely healed for about 6 weeks, and he went and talked to his minister about it, and the minister told him, that was the work of the devil, because he didn't mention Jesus Christ, and he rejected the healing, and he went right back to where he was, and he's still there today.
My back is a nightmare. I need you. It's been out forever. Oh, back pain's terrible, but that's pretty impressive story. So you've had people that have had like fractures and it heals instantly?
Yep. Yeah. And I'm even able to, I had one lady that fell off her bicycle and landed, you know, on her wrist and it hurt. And I said, well, you know, you've got a spiral fracture right here. I mean, it's like I have X-ray vision. You have a spiral fracture right here, and I can heal it for you if you like. Oh, no, we're going to go to the doctor. And they went to the doctor, and they got back in touch with me a couple of days later and said, you were absolutely right. It was a spiral fracture. She had her hand in a cast and everything. Well, I could have fixed it for you, but, you know, your choice.
Would you call that divine healing, Monty?
What do I call it?
Would you call it divine healing?
I would call it that. I use divine love, so... You know, the only difference between divine love and human love is human love is the love for or of something or somebody. Divine love just is. It's the love you would have.
So let me ask you. So now, you know, you're like you said, you're 73 years old. As you're getting a little older, it's supposedly in age, but not in spirit. What do you see at this world coming to? What's your take of spiritually, how this world people are coming through? Are they becoming more advanced? Are they back? I mean, what's your take on this world?
Okay. Well, every 26,583 years or something like that, we go through a cycle, which we hit in December 12, 2012. One of the things that I do, I see my own and other people's past lives very easily and very readily. I've even had validation on some of the things I've seen. We are going through right now what happened to Atlantis. And what is happening is that everything that has been is falling apart, and everything that will be is in the process of being born. So it's a time of very great trauma and drama, and a time of very great blessings and enlightenment. And it just depends on your focus, which one you're going to experience.
I totally believe that.
It's going to be a bumpy, rough ride, and there's going to be an awful lot of... attrition among the human race, and there will be some pretty nasty struggles, but eventually, over time, light will prevail. But there's a reason that there's people like me that are here now. We were here for the ending of Atlantis. We're here for the ending of this cycle. We're part of the setup crew or the cleanup crew, and we're training the setup crew.
Do you think taking place over decades, or do you think it's all going to come to a head anytime soon where things are going to start getting really serious?
Well, things are going to get really serious, I think, before the end of this year, but I think the whole process is probably going to take a century or more.
Do you think that, kind of going back to when you had your experience, your near-death experience, and we're here learning lessons and all that, is it a reincarnation thing where we keep coming back, do you think, to learn more?
Of course. You know, you go to school, you go to kindergarten, you go to first grade, you go to second grade, and there's a lot of people here that are still in kindergarten, and maybe I'm in second grade or third grade. I know there's a lot further to go. But, it's basically my understanding is that our soul chooses our life experiences, especially the major ones. And it, as we come into a lifetime, we have certain goals. Our daughter, who died about 8 years ago, came into this lifetime to learn about abandonment and about compassion and several other things along that line. She was she never met her biological father. I married her biological mother when she was 3 years old. I adopted her. Her biological mother turned against her and abandoned her, and she got married and her husband abandoned her, and she came back to myself and my wife Kim. And we were here for her, and we promised her right from the beginning. She'd been sick for a long time, and we promised her right from the beginning when she came back to us that we would be there for her till the end. And we held her in our arms when she took her last breath. Last thing I said to her is, "It's okay, honey. You don't have to take another breath," which was pretty tough.
Wow. Yeah, I couldn't imagine. That's got to be rough.
Yep. Well, it still brings me to tears 8 years later, 9 years later.
I think that never goes away. I mean, it's like, when you have loved ones like that, it just, the pain maybe gets less and less as time, but you never get over it. And people say, you're going to get over it. That's just, it's almost cruel when you hear people say that, because it's, to me, it's very inhumane.
Well, I think they only say that because they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But if you truly, truly love somebody, you never get over it. I'm having more. I mean, my father was an icon in my life, and he still is. I mean, he's long gone, but I don't tear up nearly as much over his death as I do over my daughter's death. And she wasn't even my biological daughter. But I couldn't have loved her anymore.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah, this life has a lot of lessons to teach. So many.
Yeah. That's why we keep coming back. Can't cram them all into one lifetime. We would never survive. Of course, we don't survive anyway, but it doesn't really matter.
I hope I come back as a billionaire at least once. Second.
I don't know if that would be a good thing.
Money-wise, right?
I hear Donald Trump's soul is open.
Yeah,
I hear Donald Trump's soul is open. Maybe you can move into that one.
No thanks. Well, I imagine people of great wealth have their own problems and issues,
exactly.
And I've known something.
I've known a lot of millionaires and even a billionaire, and you know, you sit down and talk to them, they're just real people with real problems and lots of money. And sometimes the money exacerbates the problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because maybe you won't be able to find somebody that truly loves you because there's people out there that just want to be taken care of and yeah. You know, see you just for your money.
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of Scripps Howard Newspapers and Scripps Institute of Oceanography and, you know, Scripps this and Scripps that. They had, the Scripps family had one daughter, and her name was Josephine, and I had the pleasure of knowing her. She's long, long gone, but she was born with a very misshapen face, and she dedicated herself to gems and minerals, which is a love of mine. That's how I got to know her. But she never married. She never, as far as I know, never had any relationships of any kind because she knew that as wealthy as she was and as homely as she was, that it would be very difficult for somebody to honestly love her for her, which was one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
That is tremendously sad. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine, because you'd never be able to trust anyone, you know. You'd always
exactly.
be thinking that they want you just for your money. And it's unfortunate right. that people are so shallow and like that, and people just get sucked up in you know, the way society is with making us or training us to want materialistic things, when in reality we should be focusing on you know, more consciousness kind of stuff and spirituality and giving and love and all that. But we've gone astray, yeah. So it's not going to surprise me if things get really bad, because every cycle and everything in the universe has a cleansing period, and it's coming.
Exactly. And we're just starting ours. Yeah, it's not going to be a lot of fun. I'm kind of glad that I'm 73 years old. I've kind of programmed myself to maybe make it to 103, but that's about all the time I want to do here. Yeah.
So what can
go ahead.
What can you do for our listeners? What can you do to raise your vibration so that if life here, it may not be as painful as it can be with our limited outlook on life and everything? What can you suggest?
Well, you know, the single most important thing I would suggest would be to always try to be a student and never a victim. Just that. I mean, if you find yourself feeling hurt or angry or resentful or something like that, stop and look at it from the point of view of somebody outside of yourself and say, what lesson is in this for me? What is this here to teach me for? You know, about a lot of times spirit will give me information. Spirit's my word for whoever's out there. Spirit will give me information in pictorial form, a subtext of volumes of information. And my understanding is when we come back into body from being on the other side, we have this giant walk-in closet that we can go into, but we've only got like two suitcases. And so we pick our skin color and our race and our eye color and our hair color and our parents and the major events of the lifetime. And that's and maybe whatever disabilities we bring in with us or challenges, but that's kind of all we can put into those suitcases. And so we come to Earth, you know, with just a little bit of all the potential of what we can choose. But like when you're going on a trip somewhere, if you take two suitcases on your trip and you go someplace and you buy all kinds of stuff, you can ship it back to yourself, or you can empty up the dirty clothes out of your suitcase and pack it with good stuff or whatever. And this is what we do. We come in and we add to, through our experiences, we add to what we were able to bring with us. One of the other things that I found that helps a lot is to, when you see past lives, and it's really very simple. I've taught hundreds of people how to do it. When you see past lives, usually the first thing you see is the end of that life. And having died several times in this body, I've already experienced that. And you've heard that you have a life review in that last instant of life. And I've discovered that is true. And what Spirit told me about that is that you go back through this lifetime and you harvest the little spots of wisdom that you've gained in this lifetime, and you encapsulate them in that last instant. And Spirit says that little capsule is the period at the end of your life sentence. But when you go back and see a past life and you see the end of that life, what you're actually doing is you're harvesting that capsule from that lifetime and bringing it forward and adding to what you were able to bring in your suitcases. So that's, it doesn't really serve any purpose to go back and look at the details of the life before that. You're just there to harvest that little capsule. But so seeing past lives is a real good technique for adding wisdom and understanding. And it's real simple. If you sit quietly in a semi-lit room and concentrate or allow yourself, I guess, to visualize another lifetime. It doesn't have to be anything specific. And the first thing you do is you look at the feet. What are you wearing? What color is the skin? Is it a male foot or a female foot? Is it a small foot or a large foot? What are you standing on? And then you raise your vision a little bit, and what kind of clothing are you wearing and so forth. And finally you get to the face and the hair and everything. And before you know it, you're tuned into that lifetime. And it'll be a different lifetime almost every time. And because each time, the only reason you're doing this is to harvest the wisdom from that lifetime. And it's real simple to do. And we've found that if somebody's having trouble having the vision come to them, I tell them to imagine it, because when you imagine it, it kind of unlocks the door and gives you permission to do what you've been trained you can't do. So, but it works nonetheless.
Well, I'm looking at the clock here, and we got a few minutes left, but I want to give you an opportunity now. If any of the listeners out there want to contact you, or where they can get more information about you, where would they do that?
Well, there's an easy thing to do, and that's to go to Facebook and do a search for Mani, M-A-N-I, Pureheart, just like it sounds, P-U-R-E-H-E-A-R-T. And every day I post an excerpt from my book of answers, which people find very helpful. And you can also go to my website, which is letter I, number 4, letter C, number 4, letter U, .com. It's I4C4U.com. And you can contact me via email from that website. And you can also read a little bit about my background. And that's it.
Very cool. Now, I did have one more question I wanted to ask you. It popped into my head. Now, since we're coming back, we're learning our lessons, we're taking a little bit of knowledge from each lifetime. What about people that are really bad people? I'm talking the serial killers. Does that mean that they're just going to keep coming back more, or is there a hell or anything like that? Have you ever gotten any wisdom on that?
Well, it's my understanding that we've all been the priest and we've all been the prostitute. We've all been the murderer and we've all been the murdered. We are here to experience life. Now, here's a metaphorical question for you. No answer possible as far as I know. If each one of us is an aspect of the Creator and each one of us is here to grow, then as we grow, does not the already infinite Creator become even more infinite? I find that what we call life is like the original Ponzi scheme. where creator creates, the creations come to a certain point where they recognize that, wow, with just a thought or a word, I could create an entire universe. And in that moment, they become creators. So the creator's creations become creators of their own creations, and those creations come to a point where they become creators. So it's a Ponzi scheme.
Wow, that's deep. Just infinite. The creators become the creators are created or are creating, and it goes on and on and on.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Well, Monty, we are out of time, but hey, I want to. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, we're running out of time, but I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and you know, giving us all this great information. It's fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, no problem at all. I'm always glad to help.
Thank you, Monty. We appreciate you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys, too.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yay.
All right.
Another good guess. My goodness. Quickly, next week we're going to have Cho Ponohu. Haven't been with him for a while. We're going to have him come out and talk about what's happening in Hawaii, in the paranormal area of Hawaii. And so in 2 weeks from now, we're going to go and have a special guest for the first time, Ross Allison. He is the co-author with David Weatherly. David Weatherly has been our guest in the past, soon to hope to have him back soon. Anyway, Haunted Toys. So David Weatherly and Ross Allison, they are also on the Supernatural Society of the Paranormal group. So we're going to be really happy to hear from Ross and kind of touch base. I haven't seen him for a few months, and yeah, it's going to be great to talk to him on the phone and have him as our special guest.
And you said we're going to be talking about Haunted Toys? Is that correct?
Haunted Toys or anything that's in the paranormal. They just got back in a big paranormal conference in West Virginia. So, yeah, we can talk about Haunted Toys.
Very cool. That's a very interesting subject. And because Haunted Toys potentially could exist, this is why I don't have any dolls in my room.
I don't have any either, so you and I are on the same page. Oh, that's crazy. But anyway, we want to thank everybody for listening and just supporting us. We really appreciate it. And thank you so much for just being there for us and just being supportive. So I just want to thank you.
Absolutely. So we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. And if you haven't already, please give us a like on our Facebook page, Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And with that, hope everybody has a fantastic, safe week. And be sure to spread as much love as you possibly can. Good night, everyone.
Take care, everybody. Peace.